Hello and welcome to the Sporticos Football Stories podcast. My name is Craig Hansen and today I'm joined by Phil Roberts, lifelong Liverpool fan and contributor to the Across the Park podcast. Phil is a season ticket holder who sits in the cop. He's a man who speaks eloquently about the team he loves on his own regular podcast, and I'm delighted to have him on the show today. And I can't wait to get stuck into all things Liverpool. Hello, Phil. How are you doing?
Hey, Craig. Thanks for having me. It's an absolute pleasure to be on.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you, Phil. And I think you're the perfect person for this show because we like to speak to a fan of a different club every week and not just talk about the current goings-on, which we will get into. Obviously, transfers, the squad, coming season, everything like that. But we also like to get into, you know, what it means to be a fan, the best memories of following the team, everything like that. So the first thing, question I have for you is that you're a self-described lifelong Liverpool fan, and I wanted to know how lifelong are we talking? So do you have any memory of when you were first kind of realised that you're a Liverpool fan? Did your family dress you up in all the gear when you were a baby and you don't even remember? What's your earliest memory?
Yeah, to be honest, I've seen the photographs of me in the candy Liverpool kits, the green one, the red one. But I'll be honest, my dad doesn't really like football. He never followed it. So normally it's your dad who gets you into it, isn't he? But I found it organically. Like, I literally just watching the telly as a kid. And I remember just accidentally coming across the Coca-Cola Cup final in 1995,
Liverpool. Takes me back. The Coca-Cola Cup is what it used to be. Is that the Carling Cup?
The League Cup. Do you know what? I'm quite nostalgic in that. Like, it took me ages to stop saying the Coca-Cola Cup. I don't know what we're up to now.
I still call it Carling Cup. What is it now? Carabao, isn't it? Carabao.
I couldn't tell you. Carabao, yeah.
There we go.
Carling, Worthington, Coca-Cola, yeah. Whatever. But yeah. And Steve McManaman, he was man of the match. I think he scored 2 goals that day. And he was a very, very exciting player. He was great at dribbling the ball, take men on. And as a young lad watching it, that was the type of stuff that sort of caught my eye and really got me interested in it. That was the very first proper memory. So it was 95. So I was about nine when that happened. So I sort of knew as a kid we supported Liverpool, but I didn't know what that meant until I watched that game, and then all of a sudden I did. And as I say, weird one because it was organic. Channel hopping as a 9-year-old, no one sat me down and said, let's watch this game together.
So that was when you were about 9 that you first started watching on the telly. When did you first get down to the ground?
So Christmas 1995, Christmas Day, one of my uncles who was a big Red, he bought me, my brother and my dad, a ticket to the game, which was on New Year's Day, 1st of January, 1996. And we played Nottingham Forest. So how old are you, Craig?
I'm 31, so I'm 4 years younger than you, I think.
Yeah,
about.
Yeah, 4 or 5, yeah. So I don't know if you remember, Liverpool signed Stan Collymore from Nottingham Forest.
I would have been about 6, so it would have been kind of, because he's from the air. I'm from the Midlands myself, so because Stan Collymore's from around the area, I would have been hearing things about, Collymore's the big... When I was a kid, people used to talk about him being, you know, a hot shot kind of thing, because he used to come round his sports cars and everything. So I can't say that I remember exactly hearing about that transfer, but it was definitely a big deal when he was making all his big moves.
Well, he played for Nottingham Forest and he was making a lot of noise. And Liverpool signed him for $8.5 million in the summer of 95-96. That was all of our record transfer fee.
A lot of money, yeah.
So New Year's Day was his first game against Nottingham Forest. And yeah, so we went 2-0 down in the first 18 minutes. And I remember as a kid at your first game, I think almost in tears, devastated. But then my hero, Robbie Fowler, he scored 2 diving headers, both assisted by Stan Collymore. And it was level at half time. We go into the second half and Stan Collymore steals the show, and he scores 2 goals against his previous team. We ran out 4-2 winners. Collymore kissed the badge in front of the cop, which was big news. And it was a real attacking display from Liverpool. Very typical of what we were in them days, because we had a very exciting forward playing team, and you know, the chant from the cop was attack, 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 and we didn't care much for defence, and kind of that's why we never got over the line in the 90s. But as a young lad watching, fantastic team to watch, so much excitement, and particularly on that day, there was a lot of skill on display and a lot of attack and open game, so it was great, yeah.
And what was your first impression of Anfield when you first went there in terms of the atmosphere and everything? Because I think you said you were about nine or 10 then. What was it all, what was it like getting into, I mean, going to your first football game in general is a big deal. I think the first ground I ever went to was Molyneux. My dad's a big Wolves fan.
Yeah.
And even that, you know, it's, wow, it's, you know, it loads of people. It's a bit mad, isn't it? But what was it like being at Anfield? It must have been 50-odd thousand people.
Yeah, well, we're spoiled, aren't we, as Reds? Like, we don't really know much different, but I was sitting in the cop. So you go, first of all, you've never seen that many people in your life as a kid. And I'm thinking, wow, and everyone's singing in the street. And, you know, you can hear the guys shouting in the street to selling the scarves and the caps, badges. And then you get in the ground and you can smell the pies and the fellas having a pint in the concourse. And then you go up the little steps, don't you, at your, whatever block you're sitting on, and you catch a glimpse of that turf for the first time in your life. And it's a green that you've never seen before. And yeah, and then you know, all the songs and stuff like that in the cop. And the atmosphere was probably better then than it is today, to be honest, as well. I feel like it was bouncing every single league game in them days. So, breathtaking, and certainly gives you the bug. And you certainly knew what team you were going to support for the rest of your life at that point.
And then were you sort of pretty consistently going after that, or was it still kind of here and there until maybe when you got a bit older and you started going all the time?
No, so back then it was like, it was a present, a Christmas or a birthday, get a ticket, something like that. Because even back then there was a gigantic waiting list for Liverpool. So we joined the waiting list when I was in my teens, to be honest. And it didn't come through until we got the main stand, which was only a few years back, finally come through. Me and my mate went on together, and we said, whoever gets it first, we'll share it. So he got it first, but he lives in London. So I basically go to all the games on a season ticket, yeah.
How long did you end up waiting then altogether to get that through?
Oh mate, well, like 15 years.
Oh my God. That just shows the size of the club, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. And you know, now you can't even get on a waiting list. There's a waiting list to be on the waiting list now. So.
Oh my God.
Yeah, so when the main stand got built, the ticket come through and we were on the very top row in the gods, really, really high up. You can barely recognise who's on the ball and stuff. But after we spent a season there, we got an opportunity to move to a different area. And I'm in the cop now, bang in the middle of the cop. We stand for the whole game, songs all game. And it's great. But going back a bit earlier than that, as soon as I was about 14, 15, I applied for a job in Anfield to be a programme seller. But all that was a free ticket. Because, you know, we'd cash up all the money as fast as we could. As soon as the full-time whistle went, I'd be cashed up by 10 past 3, and I'd be in the cop. You know, the stewards are just like, we knew all the stewards, so it was just like, go on, lad, get in there. I don't know if it'd be like that anymore, but that's how it was in them days. So I didn't miss a game from when I was 15 until the season ticket come through. And as I was going into my mid-20s and my career was developing, I was literally turning down job opportunities, you know, because because they wanted me to work Saturdays. And I was like, oh, no, I'll sell programs on a Saturday for 20 quid. But I got to watch the game, and it was all about that. And it was sort of great memories. So, I during that time, Liverpool won the treble in 2001, it would have been now. We won the UEFA Cup, the FA Cup, and the League Cup.
The Worthington Cup, maybe.
The League Cup, yeah. Yeah. The Worthington, yeah. And I think we won a Charity Shield and something else. I think we actually won 5 cups, but three really, I suppose. But yeah, great memories.
And you mentioned when you were a young lad, you mentioned your hero, Robbie Fowler, mentioned Stan Collymore. Was there anyone else who caught your eye, especially that first game? Maybe not even just that game, but the kind of the first few games, was there any, could you reel off a few people that really caught your eye, especially in person?
Jamie Redknapp. So I couldn't believe how far he could kick the ball. So Jamie Redknapp's passing ability is up there. You know, he was always injured and stuff like that, so we never really got to see the best of him. But, you know, not far off like Beckham-esque, Alonso-esque, like Jamie Redknapp's passing and shooting from distance.
Underrated player.
Underrated, yeah. Really, really technical. And I just remember him switching it, and I just couldn't believe how far someone could kick a ball. And for different reasons, Neil Ruddock stood out to me because he just looked like a huge man, and he just like smashed people about, and he was like, he was hard as nails, you know, from my perspective back then. He was huge. So yeah, they stood out. Steve McManaman, and even Ian Rush was still about then, you know, and it probably wasn't what he was doing on the pitch in 96 that caught my eye so much, but it was just, there was so much hype. Ian Rush was a legend.
Yeah, the
top
goal scorer,
the legacy.
Everyone's talking about him all the time, all the stories.
Yeah, absolutely. The songs in the ground, you know. Oh, so, you know, off the top of my head, they're the ones that stand out.
Well, it's quite a variation because you've got, you know, a centre-back, you've got kind of silky midfielder, winger, we've got Robbie up top. So there's a bunch of different types of players there. But when you mentioned why, it's kind of that classic thing when you're a kid, you know, oh, he's a big, hard man, or look how far I kick the ball. When you're watching as an adult now, do you find that you're attracted to different kinds of players than you were when you were a kid? Because I know that when I watch football now, there's players that I appreciate that I know when I was 9, I wouldn't have noticed were playing, I wouldn't have cared about. Do you find there's any Liverpool players now that you just love, that you think, oh, when I was 8, I wouldn't have even known they were any good?
From a very young age, I've always been the same, really, in that, do you know what? The slower players catch my eye, because if you're slow and you're playing at a top level, your brain's operating on a different level, your technique's at a different level. If you notice a lot of the best players in the world are short, like 5'8" and below, and that's because to make it at that level, at that height, your skill's got to be phenomenal. Yeah. I've never liked players who are particularly fast. Like, obviously, I can appreciate that, but just running really fast with the ball.
Yeah, it's easy, really, isn't it? It's like cheating. Yeah,
never really done it for me. So, yeah, it's the more sort of languid. You know, like Zinedine Zidane? Oh, yeah. I was in love with Zidane.
Me too.
You know, that type of a player, Dennis Bergkamp, that type of a player. From Liverpool, Jari Litmanen was that type of a player. Don't know if you remember Jari.
I do remember him.
Yossi Benayoun.
I just thought you were going to say Yossi Benayoun.
You know, that style of player catches my eye. That they're the type of players I like.
Yeah, the ones who haven't got obvious pace or obvious strength or height, and they have to make up for it with genuine ability.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. And even, you're going to laugh at me here, but even when Messi come through, I was a huge, huge fan of Ronaldinho, as I say, Zidane, and then Messi was the new kid on the block. And at first, the way he ran with the ball, I was like, ah, now he runs with the ball like it's a hot potato. I'm not into him. But over the years, I've had to grow. Obviously, you appreciate Messi. But at first, I resisted Messi because he wasn't that sort of, do you know what I mean? He's not that sort of relaxed style that I sort of lean to.
Yeah, it's not the type of player you normally gravitate towards. But would you, speaking of appreciating him now, I don't know if you heard about 10 minutes ago it come out that he's not signing on at Barca. This could be breaking news for you, maybe. I don't know if you just got back from work. But yeah, it's absolutely mental. I'm sure you've heard that they've been having this issue where they, you know, he's agreed terms with them, but because their wage bill's too high for the La Liga regulations, they need to sell loads of people so they can even sign him, Aguero, Memphis. None of these players play for Barcelona right now, technically. And basically, Messi, it's come out 10 minutes ago, it's done. He's not going to be there anymore. Is he coming to the Premier League? Could he be coming to Liverpool? Would you have him?
Well, to be honest, I saw a headline about, as you say, about 10 minutes ago, and I looked at it and thought, I haven't got time to read that, but I don't believe it, type of thing.
Yep. And it's BBC. Once I saw it was BBC, I was like, oh, it's real then. Don't know about you, but for me, that's kind of the benchmark of if someone's real.
Yeah, definitely. Barcelona are a right mess, aren't they, at the moment? They're a mess. Was I having at Liverpool? To be honest with you, the deal that it's going to take probably doesn't make sense. He's going to, I imagine, he will absolutely destroy the wage budget.
I can't imagine that much.
He's going to be on about 600. Because are you going to get him on a free? Is someone going to get him on a free?
Exactly, they're going to get him on a free. So, I mean, Man City could probably forget about Kane and just take all that money and pay him wages instead.
That's it, yeah. Yeah, they could, yeah. But what do you reckon, about 600 grand a week? Something ridiculous.
It could be even more, honestly. It could be the first million or something.
£1 million a week, yeah. And how old is he? And he's
34. He's not getting any younger.
He's on the down. It's a different country, which, you know, I don't care how good you are. That's a risk. That's a gamble. 100%. I probably wouldn't take that £1 million a week gamble if it was me. But if he goes to City, he'll certainly, enhance their chances of winning the league for the next couple of years, won't he? So,
well, they're probably kicking themselves now because they just signed Grealish, aren't they? So Guardiola's probably thinking, God, I wish we'd have known. I would have waited and just had Messi instead.
Definitely.
Anyway, to get back to Liverpool, more importantly, but before we get on to the good times, because right now is a great time to be a Liverpool fan. I think maybe last year was a little bit tricky, but other than that, it's a golden period. I wanted to ask you, first of all, before that, though, about some of the darker times in your time as a fan. There's been ups and downs, obviously. Can you think of a particular period that was the most dire when it was you really weren't enjoying turning up and watching and
easy. Every Liverpool fan, I'll give you the same answer. Can you guess?
I don't know.
Certain manager that we
Roy Hodgson, maybe.
Roy Hodgson. Yeah. grim time. What a grim time. Like,
why was it so bad? Could you explain?
His signings were just like his expectations were just not in line with Liverpool supporters whatsoever. I remember, like, I think we got beat by Everton in a derby. I remember after the game, he was saying, like, oh, that's the best we've played this season, and we were awful. And I don't know, he was just like, we signed Konchesky at left back, who was awful. I can't remember the other signings. I've put them out of my mind, to be honest.
Yeah, but he did sign a few, them kind of basic mid-table level signings that he made,
And he'd big up them basic mid-level type of performances as well. And we were in the bottom half as well for a long period. And there, in Liverpool and a lot of the Northwest, there's a bit of a north-south divide. It usually doesn't work when the two come together. There are cases of when it does, but that was an example of it. But it was just like, you don't get us. We don't like you. And quick, as soon as we can move this on.
And why do you think what went wrong with it? Do you think exactly? Because I mean, I think he came to you after Fulham, didn't he? Or was it after
Fulham?
He did a good job at Fulham, didn't he? Is it maybe just that's it? That was his. He's better at sort of punching up. Maybe.
I think it is. I mean, he just did not get. You know the way. Sometimes it's chemistry. Sometimes it's chemistry more than it is ability. And I think that's what it was with him. Like, he's a very organised manager and stuff like that. And also the mantra of Liverpool is attack, attack, attack.
Yeah, and he's the opposite of that, isn't he? He's keeping it tight. Yeah.
He's keeping it tight, and he's done well with certain clubs and that, so I don't want to diss him too much, but he didn't get Liverpool the way, and the absolute total opposite. I know we'll come on to it later, so I don't want to jump your head, but Klopp is the total opposite. He was made to manage Liverpool. His politics, his philosophies, everything about it, he's a match made in heaven. And Roy was the total opposite.
You're right, we are going to come on to Klopp very shortly, and that is going to be, the exact opposite thing. But when you were going through that time where I can't remember how long he survived, was it he had a couple of seasons, did he? Or
I think it might have been one. I think it
only
might
just
be
one. What kept you coming back for them sort of dire? But as a fan, I mean, this would be the same answer for most football fans, I guess, but that's kind of what we're trying to get into, the essence of being a football fan. But, I suppose if you're the kind of person who's on Twitter and your profile picture is Neymar and you're called Neymar 212, probably you wouldn't go and watch Roy Hodgson performances every week. What is it about you and, the rest of the Liverpool fans who were there that kept you coming back there every week when you could have been doing something better? You could have been getting better career opportunities and instead you were watching Roy Hodgson. What was that? What kept you coming back?
Well, the way it is in this city, Liverpool is an institution. Liverpool Football Club is an institution, and the institution belongs to the fans. So there's owners of Liverpool Football Club at the moment, but they are only temporary custodians of the club, and one day they won't be. They need to do the best by the club, by the fans, by the institution that they can. And if they do that, everyone will be very grateful to them. But I think all owners of football clubs need not to get above the station, because you cannot own an institution. You can't. They're not ownable. And so all the while us supporters of this institution are going along, everything else is temporary. Players, managers, owners. And, you know, and I think, yeah, the what the club means to the people of this city, what it means to their lives. And I could get really deep and I could go back to the austerity of the 80s when under the Thatcher government, this city was thrown to the, you know, it was just left to go to ruin, basically. And all we had was football. And Everton were great around that period as well, 85, 86, 87. And, you know, we had the Beatles, we had the music coming out of the city as well. So we had nothing else. There was huge poverty, you know, no job opportunities, no way out of the struggle, but we had football. And we were known around the world for having the best football, the two best football teams in the world. And so, you know, and then we've got the horrendous tragedies that this club suffered with Hillsborough, the fight for justice that went on for so long. And
the thing with the Sun as well, the reaction of the national newspaper. So there's a lot of kind of us against them mentality, I suppose, as well, right? Unity.
Very much, very much. So it's in your blood, it's in your DNA, it's in your family. It's everywhere around you as you go around the city about going about your business. So all the other stuff, the performances, the form, the managers, the owners, it can all come and go, but, you know, what matters stays.
You couldn't have summed it up better. And on your podcast, which is one of the most unique I've heard of, I think, where you've got three Blues and three Reds, three Liverpool guys, three Everton guys, and coming together and having a chat. And I think it's really, really great. And like I said, really unique. What do you find that in general in the city, what's it like with the city with... Because I don't know enough about it to know, are there physical boundaries, sort of areas where loads of people are Reds, others where everyone's Blue? Because it seems like, how do you do that thing where twice a year you hate each other? But I suppose the rest of the time, and I know this happens in all the cities, but it seems like in Liverpool in particular, there's a big rivalry. I mean, how does that work, sort of thing? How are you cordial with... I mean, do you hate your podcast brothers on the day when the derby comes?
No, do you know what? It's a weird one because it's not a religion thing, so it's not divided by that. I mean, it might have started out that way, but you know the way some cities have, like, Catholic and Protestant areas?
Is that like Rangers and Celtics a bit?
Yeah,
like
yeah, exactly.
A bit more serious and a bit more...
Yeah, it's a bit more nasty, but... In Liverpool, you could be your mum could be a Red and your dad could be a Blue. Half your family could be your brother could be a Blue and you could be a Red type of thing. So you're very much used to it. You go to school, you go to work. It's a 50-50 split. So it's just part of life. And to be honest, years ago when you used to go the match, the derby, or even just Liverpool were playing anyone else, there could be loads of Blues at the ground because you just go with your mates, Blues and Reds. But at the derby, it literally was just sitting together. So that's when it was like a friendlier derby back in them days. And I think over time, it has got a bit more nasty in it. And we've...
When do you think that started? Why has it got... Why do you think that happened?
Well, it's difficult to put your finger on it. I think it's multivariate, the reason. Obviously, we had the tragedy in 85. Everton won the league that year, but the clubs were banned from Europe because of what happened when we played Juventus. That started something off because Everton think they were robbed, rightly or wrongly. They were robbed of their European success by Liverpool fans. But I don't want to get into that really because there's a big story behind that and.
The Heysel disaster,
yeah. Ground not fit for purpose and stuff. But I also don't want to sort of say Liverpool fans weren't to blame, so I don't really want to get into it. But that was part of it. It's complicated. And then after that, you got the Premier League, and Liverpool capitalised more than Everton did on the financial side of that. You know, the Sky top four, top six, and all that, and Everton have never been part of it. And then with the money divide and the success divide, I think it's just got a bit nastier. When we were both winning Everton together in the 80s and the 60s, I think it was a friendlier derby, and I think it's got a bit nastier. But it's not that bad, though. There aren't fights. You aren't scared to leave the ground after a derby. Sure. If people are particularly drunk on a night out in the city centre after a derby game, maybe a fight could happen, you know. But that's anywhere, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's still, you know, I think it's still friendly, but it might be weird to other people, but it's normal to us. As I say, families and workplaces are divided. It's just life.
And I think it happens in a lot of cities as well, a similar thing. But what I wanted to, on that idea of the rivalry and stuff, one thing that's always kind of got me is because as I'm getting, I'm kind of neutral, really. I follow a few teams, and I follow my local team, Warsaw, and my dad's team, Wolves. I've got a soft spot for Man City. Follow a couple of Spanish clubs from when I used to live there. But, like, I kind of, I don't really have that thing then where, say if I've got mates and they support a team, I don't want their team to, like, do bad. How do you kind of, how do you sort that out in your mind, for example? The guys you do the podcast with, you know, I'm sure they're lovely chaps. You get on really well. But you wouldn't want Everton winning the league, would you? Or would you? That's what I'm saying. How does that work kind of thing? Because that would be nice for them to be happy, wouldn't it? Don't you think?
Yeah. Do you know, there's a great sense of humour in this city. Most people have got a great sense of humour. And it's the banter. And that's what it is in the workplace. You just don't want to go in. You don't want to even go in. Like,
if you lose the derby.
That's it. The fella in the corner shop where I live, he's a huge blue and he loves rubbing it in if they have any success. So you just know you're just going to be going round and that's all you're going to get everywhere you turn, just banter. And especially if one club's doing much better than the other. It's been all our way lately, though, so I can't really complain too much. So, you know, the Everton lads on the podcast, they've got a difficult job because, and the Reds actually, because if you think about it, we want red and blue listeners to listen. And Liverpool have been doing a lot better than Everton lately. So really, every episode could just be us giving them a kicking. But if you were a blue listener,
yeah,
you wouldn't want to be tuning in for that.
Yeah,
would
it's
you?
Not the place for that. Like you say, the workplace is the place for that.
Yeah,
or down
exactly.
The pub or something. And I do get that. But you mentioned there that it's all been going your way lately, and it certainly has. How does this era under Klopp stand alongside the other ones of your lifetime? Because it's not like the first time that you've done well. Like there's, you know, 2005 Champions League, 2011 treble. Even the great era from when you were a little kid, 95, 96, all them great players, all them great teams. Where does this stand up? I mean, is this the best it's been since you've been alive, do you think?
Well, the football is. The football certainly is. You know, Liverpool in 2019-20 season were the best team in the world. You know, we smashed the Premier League, Champions League. It was hard to deny, really. You know, football-wise, I've never seen anything like this. And we've been as exciting going forward. Under Brendan Rodgers, we were unbelievable going forward with Suarez and Gerrard and, you know. And
what was it? Sterling, Suarez? Sturridge. Was it Triple S or something?
Sturridge, yeah, exactly. So that was a... and under Rafa, we were a really difficult side to beat. He was a tactical sort of masterclass and, you know, we'd go 1-0 up. Shut up shop.
Hodgson with good players.
Yeah.
Good signings.
Exactly, yeah. But yeah, he had Torres and Gerrard. But no, but...
Xabi Alonso instead
exactly,
of Konchesky.
Exactly. But this team's got it all. So in terms of the football, I've never seen anything this complete. But in terms of just enjoying it as a fan, 2001 was amazing because the last time Liverpool won the league was 89-90. And I don't remember it, to be honest. So I grew up then all through the 90s, no success at all. Didn't win a single cup. The Coca-Cola Cup in 95. But
yeah.
Then 2001, we seemed to win it all. Like everything that we cut, we're eligible to win. We weren't in the Champions League. But that run to the UEFA Cup in 2001 was, we beat Roma, we beat Juventus, we beat Barcelona. The UEFA Cup wasn't then what it is now, to be honest. It was a lot better. There was well better teams in it. I think it must have been about how you qualify, and I think only two went into the Champions League in them days, so there was better teams in the UEFA Cup and all that. So that was amazing to come out of nowhere to be, we'd never played these teams in my lifetime, and I was a young lad going to the game, queuing up for tickets, didn't have a season ticket. I was queuing up for like a mile and a half around the ground, 4 a.m. in the morning to try and get a ticket. And then the songs and the atmosphere in them days was incredible. We were always in Cardiff because Wembley was getting refurbished then or rebuilt, the new grounds or whatever. So we've put all our finals in 2001 were in Cardiff, and that was the second home to us. And
The Millennium Stadium, yeah, wasn't it? We had on the other week, we had Martin O'Connor on. I don't know if you remember him. He was the Birmingham City captain.
Yeah.
And he played it. I think it was Birmingham who you beat, wasn't it, in that 2001 League Cup final? Did you manage to go then to that final at Millennium Stadium?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, Robbie Fowler, screamer. So my hero had come back to the club, I think, at that point, because he went to Leeds for a bit, come back, scored that amazing goal. It was before he left that, because that was under Julio. Yeah. one of the last games he played before he left, it was. Yeah, unbelievable. Millennium Stadium, what a ground that is, by the way. Have you been?
I've never been, no. I mean, I would have been, when all that was going on, I'd have been sort of 10 or 11. I don't think I've been, actually. I've been to Wembley a couple of times. I mean, the old Wembley as well, but I don't think I've been to Millennium Stadium ever, no.
Great stadium, just looks good. The acoustics, how close you are to the pitch, the concourse, everything about it, great stadium. So, yeah, they were great times. And then Rafa come in, and we won the Champions League for the first time in my lifetime.
Can't beat that.
No, and we had that rivalry with Chelsea, didn't we? And we kept having semi-finals, and we'd always win, kept knocking them out. And we had that, it was the Mourinho versus Rafa. There was a big rivalry there. That was great. They were great times. And obviously, it's great again, you know, under Klopp now. It's everything. The fans, the players are so are closer than they've ever been. I think the manager is more sort of one of us than ever before. Bill Shankly had that. He had that great, he was a socialist. He had that affinity with the people. He was a working class man. He shared
a connection with the club's kind of culture.
100%. And Klopp's got that. And it's a magical thing. And you know, not long ago I was on YouTube and I was watching the day that he announced he was leaving Dortmund, and there's a press conference and he's saying, you know, all good things have to come to an end, and sometimes the person you least expect has to move on. And he said, and on this occasion, it's me. And as he said, although it was Dortmund, chills went all up both of my arms. I felt like a lump in my throat, and I was thinking, oh no, one day this is going to happen to us.
Probably
2024, to be honest.
I can't imagine where he'll go next, because, I mean, he had the same thing at Dortmund, didn't he? He's like a part of the whole fabric of the club. So he needs to go to a club like that, I think, with a real special culture, real special history. I don't know where. I mean, he could go to Italy, maybe. He could go and manage a team in Italy.
Yeah,
we won't need to worry about that anyway. That ain't happening for a while.
I don't think he'll go to Munich. I can see him taking the national job and then retiring. I think
that's a good shout, yeah.
I think he can do that. I don't think he'll have another go up with another club. Yeah, he's going
but
to.
But I think he might stay at Liverpool for a long while yet. So let's not worry about him leaving just yet. Let's talk in a little bit more detail about exactly what he's done to create this unbelievable generation that he's done. So there's so many reasons, and you must have been over them on your pod a thousand times. But if you had to sum it up, what has Klopp done to reverse? I mean, under Rodgers, like you said, you did okay. I mean, you finished second that year. You had great attacking football. I think Rodgers, by the way, is a great manager. Really, really underrated.
Big fan.
But, you know, just didn't quite work out, and he went up north to Scotland. But Klopp came in, and it's just been it's been miraculous what he's done. From your perspective, what has he done to get you where you are now?
Well, the first thing I remember early days, he was saying, like, he got the fans and the media, which is important, on side. Because there was a big pressure on Liverpool. We always kept talking about back in the day. And that would always go against us. It would put a lot of pressure on the players. So,
and all the banter would be about history. Stop talking about
exactly,
your history.
Exactly, all that, exactly. So Klopp just said, let's put an end to that. And because of his personality and stuff, the media bought in. And then he was... One of the big things that is known about Klopp is how hard he likes his team to work. So that was put into the team immediately. Everyone had to work hard. Didn't matter who you were or you were gone. And then he's got this, you know, he talked about this rock and roll style of football where it was like all out attack. But, you know, at the same time, you'd have to sprint for your life to get back. And there's a real sort of, the team he's created is full of leaders. It's a real team where everyone works for each other. Look at the midfield. It's not that creative. It isn't full of the likes of your De Bruyne's and all that. It's like Milner, it's Henderson, it's Fabinho, it's Genie Wijnaldum, where it was. And, you know, but he's made that work. He's made that an unbeatable force. The atmosphere is amazing. Klopp was big enough that he actually criticised the fans once. They left early when we were getting beat. And he turned around the press conference and said, like, you just let me down. I felt completely alone. But if someone else would have said that, the response would have been, how dare you question the supporters?
It's genius, though, isn't it? Because I bet that the supporters actually felt like, I won't do that again.
Exactly. So it's everything that he's done. But he's built a real team, and the media and the supporters are actually part of that. Everyone's pushing together in the same direction. you know, and no more so than on that pitch. And, you know, belief as well. For some reason, he's installed, I don't know how he was able to do it, but real belief in the players. And even when we got beat in the Champions League by Madrid, he was like, okay, we'll come again. But, like, all these things is easy to say. But when Klopp says these things, you tend to believe him. You want to believe him.
And... like a messiah figure, isn't he? A lot of people would say that, and you'd think, nah, they won't, though.
Yeah, you won't, though.
Especially after that Karius thing, you know, that was tragic. I remember watching that when I was living in Spain on the TV with a bunch of Madrid fans. And I'm not a big fan of Real Madrid, let's put it that way. So I was very much hoping for a Liverpool win. And, yeah, just so gutted. And a lot of teams, it'd be tough to come back from that and do it all again. But they did. Yeah. Because of Klopp.
Absolutely, yeah. So, I mean, what more can you say? We need to enjoy every minute of him being here. And I don't think Klopp enjoyed it last year. He lost his mum.
Really bad year, didn't he?
He had a bad year. The injuries, personal life, no fans at the stadium. And that means a lot to Klopp. He does it for the fans, you know, and stuff like that. So I think he felt very alone, very, you know, I don't think he enjoyed himself last year. So I hope that he enjoys it this season and he gets his sort of, his love back for it, because if he's 90%, it's not, you know, and I am giving some criticism to Klopp in some ways here. I'm making excuses for him, but I don't think he was at his best last season either.
No, of course.
But understandable why, and, you know, I think the fans are right behind him and hope that he gets that love and that feel back. You know, we actually changed as well. Liverpool have always been at Melwood. That's where we train. We actually moved to a new place last year. And I remember Klopp saying, it's actually really windy. And because of COVID, the doors are open. It's freezing inside. And because of COVID as well, you could only have so many people in each room. And he felt like the soul had gone out the club because of a few things, because of the move and because of the COVID and stuff like that. So I think if we can get back to normal, there'll be a much better feeling around the place. And I think, you know, we'll return to the former glory.
I think so too, because like you said, no one's above criticism, but I think you hit the nail on the head there. I haven't heard many people really mention that factor, that he is that kind of manager that very much kind of I don't know, he coaches on energy and stuff, doesn't he? And it's very much kind of about the fans being there, and it's kind of this back and forth. I think there's some other managers, you know, that Guardiola, for example, are very like forensic. His dream probably would just be every match is a training match on the training ground. There are no one's there and it's just chess, you know what I mean? And he don't think he cares at all if anyone's there, anyone's even watching, it's even recorded. I think it's all just about all the tactics and everything. But I think with Klopp, it is, like you said, I think he feeds on that energy. He wants the goals to go in and the excitement for the fans. It's all the atmosphere. It all ties in for him. So I think it probably COVID struck your team a lot worse than it could have done some others, probably.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And you know, that's there'll be other fans of other clubs laughing at me saying, well, we're all under the same conditions, but Liverpool, the Liverpool supporters are often credited for dragging Liverpool over the line. You know, when we come back against Barcelona, all those, and there's many, many incredible European nights, and everyone says the Kop sucks goals in, things like that. So how can you give it that credit one season and then in the next season say, oh, the Kop doesn't make any difference? You know,
it does, it's not just about the size of the stadium. I'd say, for example, Palace have a similar dynamic, you know, at Selhurst Park. They got a great support. That when team, not saying, I'm not going to, you know, bury Man City and say they don't have the same. I'm sure they do have great supporters, obviously. But I mean, nowadays it seems like their atmosphere is not quite as good as it was back in the day when they're at Main Road, but It's you know, some teams just, like you say, it seems to have an effect, and you can't deny stuff like that. Barcelona comeback was crazy, and if that would have been played behind closed doors, never is that result happening, I don't think.
Not possible. No way. No, absolutely not.
So it's one of those things. But to come on then to the next part of the conversation on Klopp, I wanted to ask, he's delivered the Champions League, he's delivered the league, first league title in, how many years would that be?
89, 90. So 20 years. Sorry, no.
20.
30 years.
So, wow, that's a very long time. Which was sweeter, the Champions League or the league?
Oh, the league. Absolutely. We've won the Champions League in my lifetime, 2005, and that was special, very, very special. But because we'd sort of ticked that box, and only, and you know, all our rivals have got that over us, haven't they? You know, United, Arsenal, City, Chelsea. I'll come back when you've won a Premier League and all that. Like, it makes a difference that like they think football started in 92, don't they? But it was something that they had to say. So it felt pretty special to put that one to bed.
So you've had those two unbelievable, well, several great seasons and the two big, big trophies. Then last year, as we touched on, it kind of hit a bit of a stumbling block for many reasons, COVID being one of them. But the big, big thing's got to be the injury crisis at centre-back, which is kind of, there have been a few similar ones over the years, but this was a pretty crazy one, really. Losing Van Dijk, Matip and Gomez and having to, you know, draft in returning loanees and bringing in Kabak from Schalke and just crazy times. Now, the question I've got for you is, do you think that that was just the most terrible look, or should it have been handled better by the club? Is there any responsibility that, do you have to foresee those? I mean, can you foresee some of that catastrophic? And I suppose you need to, don't you? Anything can happen. You need to prepare for the worst. Could they have prepared better?
Well, what I will say as well, it wasn't just in defence. It was midfield as well, you know. We signed Thiago and he got injured straight away. He missed a lot. And then when he come back, he had to play every minute because there was no one else. And he wasn't really fit. He didn't have a chance to get fit again. Injured for ages, back straight into it. Wijnaldum had to play every game and he's since come out and said, I was injured, but I just had to, I had to play. We lost Henderson for a large part.
Fabinho had to play at centre-back because there was a point where he was playing him there when he did kind of have a choice, but there was actually a time where I don't think he actually had a choice, did he? He didn't have any centre-backs. He had to play a midfielder, and when you lose Fabinho from the midfield, I mean, it's doubly terrible, isn't it? Because you've lost your best midfielder probably, and he's playing at centre-back where he doesn't belong.
It was just horrendous. But to your question, now, Gomez and Matip, they're very, very injury-prone players. They're great when they're on form, when they're able to stay fit, they're great players. But we've known for a long time. So a lot of us were saying prior to that season, we need a centre. Like, everyone was saying, oh, we don't need centre-backs because we've got Lovren, we have Van Dijk, Gomez. But we sold Lovren.
And you had three.
So then we had three, and two of them are injury-prone.
That's not good, is it?
It's not good. But we were probably thinking, well, we've lost Lovren, but you know, we've got other players who can do a job there, like Fabinho. But it probably won't come to that. But you know, it did. So I think we should have signed a defender, and I think it wasn't difficult to see that.
Yeah, before the season in January, you had to get the emergency guys in. But you know, and to be fair, they did a good, decent job. I mean, I thought Nat Phillips did.
Did
really
great.
Well considering the circumstances, and Kabak looked okay too. But hopefully now, next year, that won't be a problem. And this is where it gets interesting for you, because I wanted to ask you, what do you make of Ibrahima Konate coming in from Leipzig? He seems to be a top player, but it's one of them strange ones, isn't it now? Because like, is he going to start? Or is he, if he is, is Gomez going to be a backup? The thing nowadays seems to be whenever any big club signs a really good player, it's a really good, obviously, but then you end up thinking, oh, but now it's a shame because what's going to happen with this guy?
I've spoke to a lot of Liverpool supporters recently who think, you know, we've spent that type of money, he's straight in, it's him and Van Dijk. But just the way I am, any new signing, I don't care who they are, they've got to sort of prove themselves to me. I know Gomez is brilliant, and I would like it to just be Van Dijk and Gomez, and then there'll be opportunities, someone gets injured, Van Dijk can't do 90 minutes yet, Konate will have a chance to come in, show us what he can do, and you know, and if he looks brilliant, then you keep your place. But for me, it's not like, we've spent that money on you, so you're a shoo-in to start. I don't believe in that. But also, I don't believe Klopp believes in that. We've signed many a player and not seeing them for 3 months. Fabinho, case in point, he was nowhere near the Liverpool first team for about 3 months. Andy Robertson couldn't get anywhere near the first team for a good while. So Klopp teaches them the Liverpool way in training, all that type of stuff. And then eventually when they do come in, they're ready for it. And so I can imagine a similar thing. But the thing is, the difference is, though, this season, Gomez and Van Dijk probably aren't ready to start the season. So Konate and Matip will probably start for Liverpool in the first game of the season. So he's got his opportunity right from the off to show what he can do. And if he looks great, or Matip might look great, whoever looks better, that's who will partner Van Dijk when he comes back.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's going to be interesting because them two are going to have to force themselves back in. And I mean, and obviously Van Dijk's going to come in. You'd think even if he kept 10 clean sheets in a row, Van Dijk's coming back in. But like you said, Konate could have his place nailed down just on his own performances. But whatever happens, it means you've got four very capable centre-backs. You're going to look good in that. In that area of the pitch, you're looking good. Do you foresee any other incomings? And do you think you need any? Is there any areas where you could do with bolstering or even just flat-out replacing someone?
Yeah, I don't think Trent had his most consistent season. And I think it's had something to do with the lack of... He's got no one in. We haven't got a second choice right back, really. We put Milner
there. No competition.
And I think his performance has slipped a little bit. Defensively, Trent does lack a bit at times. So I think he needs pushing to get the best out of him. So I definitely think we need a right back. I think Gini Wijnaldum, we've lost him. That is a gigantic blow to this club. You know, where to start with him, his leadership, his attitude, his work rate, his ability, his in-game intelligence, and not to mention his availability. He's always fit.
Yeah, fantastic player.
One of the few who was fit last season. So already, I think I heard the other day that Thiago has got a knock. Henderson, he's got 4 weeks off before he's ready to come back and fit. So Fabinho... has he been anywhere with South America? I think with Brazil, I think he has.
I think he might have gone to the Copa. He would have gone to the Copa America, wouldn't he?
He doesn't really play for Brazil, though.
Not the Olympics, definitely not. I don't think he went to the Olympics.
But yeah, so...
So who could be lining up? I mean, assuming he plays a 4-3-3, who's going to be the three in midfield?
I think it's going to be, in the opening game, Thiago, Fabinho, and... Or actually, it won't be Fabinho. It could be Thiago, Milner, and Keita. Which, look, don't like sort of rule Milner out of being capable. He's the fittest player in this team.
Keita was more the weak link, I was thinking personally.
Yeah.
Not that he's a bad player. I think he could be a great player, but just again, maybe it's a little bit.
You're right.
He needs a bit more time.
He's definitely
maybe.
Right. He blows hot and cold, but unfortunately, he seems to blow hot when the pressure's off and it doesn't really matter. And he seems to be cold in the big games. So. And I'm not sure you can rely on him tactically, which is a big thing to cop.
So you need at least another midfielder, basically, if for nothing else, for depth,
absolutely.
Even if they're not going to
start. So
anywhere else? The right back you mentioned. What about the front three? I mean, it's just phenomenal, isn't it?
Yeah, the front three. Well,
but is there any more backups could come in to challenge?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'll be honest. Roberto Firmino has not been himself for nearly 2 years now, so I think he may.
That's the thing. I don't watch every game closely like you do. You know what I mean? So that's the thing. When you talk to a fan of a certain club, you find, because obviously on a Saturday, I'm not going to watch 90 minutes of every single Premier League. You know, I'll watch Match of the Day. I'll watch two or three games over the weekend, but I don't watch it religiously every Liverpool game. So you're telling me Firmino has been going under the radar, actually not even
being
that good.
30% of what we know him to be for at least 18 months. And I think he's lost his place in the first 11 to Diogo Jota.
I forgot about him.
I think Jota's going to be in the first 11 next season. So then you're talking about Bobby, we call him, Roberto Firmino. Bobby will be on the bench, which isn't a bad player to be bringing on if you want.
Not too bad.
He changes the dynamic for me, a different way. He's a bit like the type of player I was saying at the beginning who I really like. You know, that sort of... He's seeing things that other players aren't, and he's silky, doing things that you don't expect. But I think we could do with someone else up there. I think we're probably going to sell Origi, and we'll be selling Shaqiri as well. So and they're sort of forward players, aren't they? So we definitely need, I would say, someone to come in and replace them. I was reading a link
I was going to say, who have you been linked with? Because I haven't really heard a lot about it. I've heard that Origi might go to Wolves. but I haven't heard a lot about who could be coming in.
No, there's not much. There's Renato Sanchez, but he's not really a forward, is he?
Nah, he'll be playing in the midfield three if he comes in. Yeah. Could that be a good signing, though, to be fair?
Yeah, probably.
For a replacement, Adam.
Yeah, I think he's a bit like, you're not sure what you're going to get, though.
Yeah, he struggled in the Premier League, didn't he? He wasn't very good at all, but he's kind of rebuilt his career now at Lille, and I think he could be a decent signing.
Yeah, definitely. There's been a lot of talk about him. And then, you might know better than me, there's a guy, he's a Canadian lad, and his name's like two names, like Jonathan Edward, or two very English names like that, and I think he plays...
Is he one of the ones who plays in Germany? Because they all play in Germany.
But he's meant to be, like, I don't know much about him, but what I've been reading about him is that when you see him, he looks like a Liverpool player in that he's like a wide forward, he's really quick, you know.
He's probably going to be one of these Canadians who's playing for Bayern, or... There's a load of them over there now.
Yeah, I can't remember his name, but we've been linked with him, but I couldn't tell you too much about him.
Ah, Jonathan David. No, I got to say, I did not. He plays for Lille, actually, and I got to say, it looks like you're in for all the Lille players, I suppose. I didn't know. I don't know much about him, actually, no, not at all.
They won the UEFA Cup, didn't he? Did they? Or they won...
Well, they won the French League, didn't they? Yeah, exactly, over PSG, and I know Sanchez was pretty, like, integral in that. But I don't know a lot about this Jonathan David guy. I don't know if maybe he was backup or if he was playing all the time. I don't know.
No, I think he was an integral part of the forward line for them last season. And he does look like... You see the highlights of him. He looks really quick and stuff like that. So there's been rumours that were linked to him. But apart from that, no, the Mbappe rumours aren't going away. Liverpool are Nike now, don't forget.
Well, if we talk about wages, that'd be another one of them Messi-esque wages ones, wouldn't it? God, that'd be a crazy one.
Unfortunately, Salah would have to go up.
Yeah, and I don't know about... I don't even know if I'd make that switch personally. Maybe it sounds mental, but I'd rather have Salah over Mbappe personally.
Better the devil you know, isn't it?
I actually prefer him as a player. But whoever comes in and whoever goes out, what can Liverpool fans expect from next season? What are you thinking in terms of... style of play, if it's going to change a little bit, maybe, because a few players going out and a few players coming in. And more importantly, in terms of where you might finish and what you might win, what are you expecting?
Yeah, so I think Klopp always tweaks something. It might not be that noticeable to supporters of other clubs, but he tweaks something, whether we move the line further up, play with the formation, do something different with the fullbacks. And I think what we want this year is a bit more creativity and goals from the midfield. And we didn't really see the best of Thiago because we never seen him with like a fixed set midfield three. He was someone different every week. But when we did get Fabinho, Henderson and Thiago together, Thiago looked phenomenal in a couple of games towards the end of the season. So that's what I'm thinking will be the big thing that you'll take from Liverpool this year. I think will be, you know, in terms of solidity, Fabinho and Henderson are solid. They're so reliable, so tactically astute. And don't forget, even Thiago is a number six for Bayern. So he's not exactly defensively lapsed either. But I think Fabinho is going to be sitting, and I think Henderson and Thiago will have a bit more license to create. And I think, you know, it'll be a very impressive looking midfield. I'm hoping that, you know, that aside, we get back to the team that we were. Why not? Why wouldn't we? That's what I'm hoping for, and that's what I'm expecting.
Challenging for the title, challenging for the Champions League, and just being up there.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, success would only be winning, you know, one of them trophies, if not both. And it's not going to be easy because, you know, City, if they get Kane, as well as they've just signed Grealish.
Yeah, Grealish is officially over the line. I think Italy is medical, so...
Yeah, Chelsea have looked well better under... the new manager, they
Tuchel. Unbelievable, and they're so hard to score against. They're so good defensively, and if they get Haaland, it's I think that's probably an even bigger thing than if City get Kane.
Yeah, if they get Haaland, is that really on the cards? Is it?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, it is with all these links and stuff, but it does. I don't know. I mean, it looks, there's a lot of signs that it could work. I mean, especially if Man City sign Kane, because that pretty much eliminates one of the only teams who are going to be able to buy him, aren't they? Especially with Barcelona and Madrid being in the situation they are. Yeah. And PSG aren't really going to sign him unless they get rid of Mbappe. I think Chelsea are in pole position. And could be interesting.
Yeah, it will be. That would make it a really difficult league to win. And then, even United, you know, Jadon Sancho and Varane.
Yeah. And Varane.
They're two good signings. If they could, are they in for Haaland?
They're well up there now. I don't think they're in for Haaland because of, well, it sounds daft, but with them signing Cavani, I think it, at least for a year, I don't know, it'd be a bit, I mean, it'd be fine, I suppose, they'd bring him in and play Cavani sort of as a backup 15, 20 games a year or something, but I can't imagine, I don't know, they've already spent a fair bit, haven't they, and
but even
I don't know if that's going to happen.
Even without the signings, they've done a good signing, so
they're up there for sure.
It's going to be a tough league to win, it's going to be an exciting league to be part of and watch though, isn't it?
It's going to be, our league is, it just, it's head and shoulders, I think, the best league in the world. And when you look at some of the front threes now, with when you look at like Liverpool with Jota, Mane, Salah, and then United's now is going to be Cavani, Sancho and Rashford, I suppose. Man City are going to have any of the six that they like playing up there. It's
the
just
only thing I'll say about City, though, if because they're talking about selling Sterling, aren't they, maybe to like Spurs or someone.
Yeah, that, I wouldn't do that if I were them.
No, I wouldn't, but I think he is down the pecking order now. But, you know, if they lose Sterling and Aguero and replace them with Grealish and Kane, is that better?
I don't know. I mean, it's one of the, they're losing the DNA of the club little by little as well. And I know that's a natural thing that you have to do. You always have to kind of replace. Players move on, Silva, all these players. Fernandinho will be gone soon. That's just how it naturally happens. But I think that's too big a change to make. And I think Sterling's a really underrated player. And I definitely don't think that Grealish is a... like-for-like swap, I don't think Grealish is an improvement. I would prefer, in that on the left, I would play Sterling over him for sure.
Yeah, for effectiveness. Yeah, absolutely. So I don't think they're particularly stronger with the signings they've made, even if they get Kane, with letting Aguero go. So
it's one of them on paper. It looks just, oh my God, it's phenomenal and all the money. But then it don't always work out like that, does it, when you're actually on the pitch?
Like you say, Chelsea could be the ones to fear more.
Yeah, I always fear a team as well that's really good at the back, really solid. And I think Tuchel's Chelsea are outrageous at the back, aren't they?
All premierships are won on that basis, aren't they? That's why Rodgers didn't get over the line. We conceded 50 goals in 2014. We scored like 105 or something, conceded 50.
Yep.
Can't win a league like that.
You did well. Actually, I think that's going to be one of the... Oh, no, did I include that one? No, I don't think I... Let me think. Oh, did I?
Oh yeah, we've got a quiz.
I'm going to do a little quiz. I did actually. I think I included that. Anyway, before we get off then, and before we get to our quick little quiz here that we want to do called "Do You Know Your Heroes," I just wanted to ask you real quick, just to sum up then, how long's it been since you've been in the ground with the pandemic, and how excited are you to get back in there?
Yeah, I think I was at the last game, Atletico Madrid. That shouldn't have gone ahead, really.
The one that caused all the... Yeah, I was living in Spain at the time when that all went crazy, and all the newspapers were saying that one of the big reasons was because the government let all the Madrid guys go over there and come back.
Yeah, so it has been a while, but I think I'll be there for the first game of the season. Do you know, I can't even remember who that is at the moment.
I don't think Leeds. I can either.
Could be Leeds. I can't think. Yeah, I'll be there, and it'll mean everything to be back.
It's Norwich, away at Norwich. You got... Yeah, it is. You got a couple of friendlies coming up against Bilbao and Osasuna, doing a little Spanish tour, I suppose. Yeah. And then it's away at Norwich on the Saturday. You're going to be on the TV, I suppose, 5:30.
Yeah, those two Spanish games are in Anfield, by the way.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, they are. It's not... Well, the Spaniards are coming over here, in Merseyside.
Yeah. So who's the first home game?
So this is first away games at Norwich, and the first home game will be Burnley on the 21st. So you'll be in there for that. I mean, it's going to be emotional, right? I suppose.
Yeah, it's going to be. Yeah, we'll give them a good hiding, and it will be. No, it really will be. For those two home games, there we're going to be at 75% capacity. So I don't know why it's not 100. Hopefully, there's no issues, and it'll be 100 when we get back to the Premier League. But just amazing. I think the Kop will be in full voice. It'll be an amazing atmosphere for Burnley at home. So it'll just be incredible to be part of.
Even more than it was before, probably, because people have missed it so much. They're going to be really going for it. Well, it's been so good talking all these things through with you. But let's see if you know your heroes. So I'm going to ask you 10 questions, and for each one of them, they're all sort of numbers related. But obviously, you can also give the players as well, or any variation of the two if you can.
Okay.
So, Number of League Cups won. That's Worthington, Coca-Cola, Carling, Carabao included. This is a record, apparently. Do you know how many you've won?
I feel like it's 8.
Very good. Correct.
Is that right?
It is correct. 8. Player with the most league appearances.
Ian Callaghan.
Correct. Do you know the number?
I feel like it's 850-ish.
It's a little bit off there. It's 640. The 850 is closer to the total thing.
Oh, but in league.
There you go. In league, it's 640. Oh. So I'll give you that. But you got that. All you needed was the name. And that was very impressive. Player with the most continental appearances. So European appearances, I suppose.
Well, because that includes the UEFA Cup as well. So it
doesn't exactly. UEFA, Europa, Champions League. I mean, I don't want to give you a clue, but it could even be all the way back, but it's
yeah,
not.
Yeah, okay. Someone that we all know. I feel like it could be Gerrard. But...
Close. It's the other one, Jamie Carragher. 150.
Carragher. Okay.
150 yeah. European appearances. Oh, player with the most red cards for Liverpool. This one surprised me.
Red cards. So you would want to say the obvious ones would be like Graham Souness, Tommy
yeah,
Smith.
Yeah, exactly. Someone like that. But no, it's actually
someone else.
Quite a good player.
You've got a lot of reds.
Really good player, you might say.
A really good player.
Maybe the best ever.
Kenny Dalglish.
Well, maybe not. Oh, I'm not a Liverpool fan. Gerrard. Steven Gerrard, 7 hey, red cards.
You got a few, especially early on.
Unbelievable, yeah. Then it's 7 yellow cards. Player with the most goals in all competitions.
Ian Rush.
Correct. It's difficult, but do you know the number?
Let me think.
I couldn't name this for any team. So just so you know, you're not expected to know these mad stats.
It's around 300.
Very good. Very close. 346. Very
okay.
close.
Yeah.
Player with the most European goals.
European goals. I think. Trying to think if it comes to mind because you're just thinking, why wouldn't it be Rush again? But
yeah, surprisingly not a striker.
Not a striker. Gerrard.
Gerrard, 41 from midfield, 41 in Europe, only Europe, yeah. 41.
Unbelievable.
Just one of the best players ever,
yeah,
I think.
Absolutely.
Unbelievable. This one's an interesting one. Most international goals while playing for Liverpool. This is a random one. So while playing for Liverpool, they did really well for their country.
Okay, well, let me just think of what some of the obvious ones. So, Michael Owen was a big England... I'm going to say Michael Owen.
That's one. It's joint. There's him and someone that was previously mentioned.
Okay, Kenny Dalglish?
No.
No.
Somebody previously mentioned who has another record of goals for Liverpool.
Gerrard? No.
Rush.
Oh, sorry, Rush, yeah.
So, Ian of Rush course, scored 26 for Wales. And Michael Owen scored 26 for England while playing for Liverpool. These next two, I think, are probably going to be the easiest ones for you. Record transfer fee paid.
Obviously, I'm thinking Van Dijk, but we also broke the record with Alisson, didn't we? Or was that just a record for a keeper?
That's the thing. I actually thought that. I had in my head 90 million for Alisson, but that's not true at all. Actually, I looked into it and actually Alisson is the second. I think it must be the keeper record. So it was Van Dijk.
Well,
I don't suppose you remember the number.
It cost us an extra 20, didn't it? Because Klopp met him in Blackpool or something like that. Do you remember that? And we got up. Yep. We tapped him up the year before.
What's the story?
So it was like we were out the running. We got fined and everything. And we had to say, oh, sorry, Southampton, we'll give you an extra freaking 20 mil.
Oh my God! What? So we went and met him in.
I think
Blackpool.
It was in Blackpool somewhere. Yeah.
Give him give him all the talk
yeah,
and that.
We got done oh exactly.
God.
Yeah, we got done for it. But so I think it ended up being.
But officially,
I think it was going to be 70, and it ended up around 90.
No, you were close to 75
okay,
apparently.
Yeah.
Record transfer fee received for which
player? Must be Philippe Coutinho, and I think we got. It was weird in the end because it was all tiered, but I think it was in the region of like 120 mil or something.
Very good, exactly. 120 million euros, apparently. But yeah, Philippe Coutinho to Barcelona. When you were going through that phase of sort of they were buying the best player every year for silly money. And looking back, you think, I know at the time everyone was, oh my God, it's a it's a we disgrace. And looking back, you're like, ka-ching. Yeah, unbelievable. Because, I mean, his career has just dropped off a cliff since he left, and the money you've reinvested, it's been epic. Okay, final one of these then. We kind of touched on this earlier. Top flight season with the highest number of goals scored.
I think it was that Rodgers season, and I'm going to say 102.
Oh, so close. Oh, 101. Okay. 2013-14, yeah. Brendan Rodgers, 101 goals scored. Unbelievable. I don't know if it's the record ever. Maybe City scored a couple more, did they, no, that season when they went crazy? And...
I think it was actually Chelsea when they won the league under Mourinho, because he's seen as a defensive manager, but they definitely went over the 100 goals in
that whatever is
year
a surprise.
It was, 04, whatever year that was. Yeah, yeah.
That is a surprise. Like you said, defensive coach, I would have thought 70 goals, maybe 20 conceded. Okay, well, yeah. thank you so much, Phil. It's been such a pleasure talking to you. You've been such a good guest. Really appreciate you coming on the show. Is there anywhere that people can follow you on social media and the podcast? Where can people hear your stuff?
Yeah, so you can find Across the Park on Twitter, at Across the Park PC, Instagram, at Across the Park PC, and Facebook, Across the Park. You can find us on any podcast app you prefer to listen to, whatever one it is. We're on them all, Spotify.
Whatever Apple, you're on now, just go ahead, search for Across the Park, and there it is.
And the website, www.acrosstheparkpodcast.co.uk. And we've also got a page where we've interviewed legends of both Liverpool and Everton. Jamie Carragher's one that springs to mind recently that we've done. So loads of great interviews on there, and also some articles that we've written as well and things like that on the website. So check
it
out.
Thanks again, Phil. Thank you so much. We'll let you go now. It's almost 9 o'clock here, so it's time to rest. Go, you can go and read about that Messi story now. There's probably been another mad story. Yeah. It's going crazy these last 2 days, isn't it? I don't know what we've missed.
He's probably already signed for City, hasn't he?
We'll see. All right, Phil. Thank you so much, buddy. Have a good one.
Thanks for having me, mate.
Thanks so much for listening to the Sports Across Football Stories podcast. Please leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts if that's where you're listening. It really genuinely helps a small podcast like ours out. Also, if you enjoyed today's episode, please share it with a friend or a foe. Anyone who wants to hear football content, we really do appreciate that more than you could imagine. Also, head to sportsacross.com for news, data, statistics, live streams, you name it, everything you need from the world of football. You can also follow us on Twitter, that's @sportacross.com. You can follow myself @CraigSportacross. And we'd also love to read out the thoughts and questions of our listeners, so please do feel free to tweet those to me anytime, or send us an email to show@sportacross.com with your opinions or your questions, and we'll get to those on our next episode. Either myself or a guest will cover those. Thanks again so much to Phil for coming on to speak to us today. It's been a real pleasure speaking to him. Thank you so much for listening, and see you on the next episode of the Sports Across Football Stories podcast. Goodbye.